Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Yo guys, welcome to The Last Lap.
Don't forget to drop a lovely, juicy 5-star rating if you're watching on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Hope you enjoy, and let's get into it. Good afternoon, evening, morning, / dusk or dawn, ladies and gentlemen, depending on where you are in the world. Welcome to The Last Lap podcast. It is myself, Niran, and of course, the lovely Tomo here today.
I'm now 30. What does this mean?
It means you're wise. And you're in the prime of your career if you're a centre-back. Is okay. What it means. You're out here, mate.
Amongst F1 drivers as well, I'd say, what was a prime for an F1 driver age-wise, if we're going to generalise here?
I think we're talking that sort of, that 26 to 32 range.
Do you reckon?
I think, for me.
So I've got two more years until my...
Two more years and then you're washed. Yeah, okay. I'm not going to lie.
I've got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're getting a move. You know, you'll be going like IndyCar, yeah. Like Le Mans or something.
Actually, this morning, I was filming something for my own channel and I was sat there and I moved like an inch to the left and my knee just like twinged. I was like, everything's breaking now.
As a man with a serious knee injury in the past that prevented me from going pro, obviously, I understand the trials and tribulations. But ladies and gentlemen, we are back again for more off-season action.
Yeah, I think we've been holding the fort quite well.
I think we've done well, to be honest with you.
Because January's dry.
January, yeah. Well, that's a lot for a lot of people. It's pretty dry as well.
If they're
choosing to challenge themselves.
That's true.
But I'm an alcoholic.
That's it. I already had a couple of Baileys. Do you think it's weird having a Baileys in like midday Baileys?
I don't think that's a problem because I think Baileys is Leng.
Yeah,
so I don't have a problem with it.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Because it's one of those drinks where if you have it, you feel like a little bit sophisticated.
Yeah.
But B, it also just doesn't really taste like, it's not like a drink where I'd go, I'm going out with the lads after this. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
It's not a raucous drink.
You know,
well, let us know if you're watching on YouTube in the comments below. What do you think of as we sidetrack at the start?
Yeah, I was going to say, shout out Dry January. January Warriors as well.
You know, we're just like, we've just spent 3 minutes of this pod talking about
Baileys and you being there.
Hopefully, we're not in this stage like mid-season when the title's already been wrapped up.
Well, I mean, that's the dream. This is what I'm hoping
for 23 because we started this show, right, mid-season.
Yeah.
What, Belgium was the first race we covered on the live stream, so make sure you're subscribed so you can watch the live shows for every single race in 2023. Yeah. But the championship, I mean, that was Max Verstappen's most dominant race of 22 by a good margin, and there were a lot of dominant races from him last year.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think that, you know, going into this year, there's all the excitement coming up. Like, do you think we're... I think this year's going to be...
This year is going to be gas, and obviously it'll start off well for us. We won't be going straight in with like a title's kind of already done.
Yeah, because it already kind of was.
I remember thinking after Paul Ricard, like, yeah, no, this is a wrap now. Realistically. But yeah, this season hopefully should be a lot closer. I have faith in Ferrari not to make as many blunders as last season. I have faith in Mercedes to be a little bit quicker. And maybe we can get that age-old rivalry between Toto Wolff and Christian Horner back. Because I enjoyed that, I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed that little era there. They're very different personalities and I love how they came together to have that. It almost felt like an added... element of Mercedes v Red Bull was Toto versus Christian.
Toto was already kind of stokes the flames a bit.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
had his what? Send, he lives rent. I can't imagine Toto Wolff saying the words rent free.
It definitely was translated. He did, I think someone heard him say it in German, and they were like, "That's basically what it means."
Can anyone in the comments translate rent free in German?
Rent-free.
Do you reckon that's like a term like globally?
I really lots of different it languages. We only just discovered it like last. Everyone else been saying it for ages, but
yeah.
Well, I hope so.
He said the beef with Horner is like a waste of time, mm-hmm. right? But I think this is part of the sport. It's mm-hmm. part of the shenanigans that goes on behind the scenes. It's always been a thing. There's always yeah. been teams taking little digs at each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and it's kind of, I think what Christian and Toto do better than anyone else is they will make it about them mm-hmm. to take heat off of the team, to take heat off of their drivers. Yeah, yeah. That's part of the job.
You're taking bullets for your team, for your drivers. If someone makes a mistake during a Grand Prix, I just take a dig at the other team principal and boom, that'll be what the headlines are about.
Exactly.
And plus it adds to the spectacle, man. You know, I always make comparisons to football, but like when you had that era of Arsene Wenger versus Jose Mourinho, hilarious, man. That was gas. Like it added, not only were you getting like the game actually out on the pitch, the managers were scrapping on the touchline as well. Like,
and there were totally different characters as well.
Exactly, yeah. And I feel like Toto and Christian are very, they're very different leaders as well in the way they lead their respective teams, and they're very different personalities as well. Your Toto is that very sort of like literally like the Terminator.
Both in speech and in
leadership style. And Christian Horner is just like flamboyant, just says what the fuck he wants, doesn't care, bend the rules sort of.
Yeah. Well, Christian's got that, I think he's really nailed that us against them mentality and really dived into like what makes Red Bull, like we're just the energy drink company that,
and we're taking on these huge, you know,
yeah, and we don't have a right to be here but we're coming up against these big mates, which is like, it is in itself impressive, but also Red Bull GmbH is a massive multi-million dollar company. So it's not like they're some nobodies, but it's about cultivating that kind of, you know, that feeling inside the team.
Yeah.
And then I think Mercedes as well. I read a good article last week, and it was talking about how kind of, even though it's Mercedes, the fact that Toto owns a third of that team, it's almost like they're able to preserve this feeling of independence, because obviously they used to be Braun, which before then was Honda, which before then was, oh God,
BAR.
That's it, BAR.
Was it before then?
Nada. I can't remember. I'm not sure.
I think it was Tyrrell? Tyrrell.
It could have been. Yeah, I think it was Tyrrell, actually.
Tyrrell. Oh, man, that would have been so much better. Why was it not called that? That would have been so
You just
much
dropped
better.
One of the, what would you, is it two R's in Tyrrell? I can't actually remember.
Yeah, just Tyrrell Mitchell.
Just make one of them a silent R.
Yeah, silent R. Yeah. You can pronounce it like that, exactly.
But I think that's part of what's made these teams successful as well. You've got the right person. I mean, Toto's been in charge for a long time, Christian for even longer. And I think as long as, you know, that Mercedes catches up, which common sentiment seems that it's going to be a three-car championship next year.
That's the dream.
I mean, and obviously we've got Fred Vasseur wading into it as well. It'd be interesting to see how Fred, because you almost had, you know, Bonotto would sometimes get, mainly with Horner, there'd be a few little tiffs.
I wonder
how Fred's going to like conduct himself amongst those top team principals now.
I feel like he's going to be the most professional one.
Do you reckon?
I feel like he's, because Toto is like pragmatic, but also just says some stupid shit a lot of the time. Like he'll come out and just stoke the fire for like no reason.
Like
Christian does as well.
Yeah.
That's where they are similar. They love the drama.
Oh, mate.
They do love it.
Come on. Of course they do.
Whereas I think Fred will come in and maybe be like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
I'll just steer clear.
That's something that Fred,
I don't want to comment on this matter. That's sort of like, you know.
I don't know though. I think Fred's a bit of a, I don't know, low key, like.
I hope he is.
Savage. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's certain stories I've heard. I think it was when he went to Sauber first, they had an engine deal lined up, and within his first week, he was like, no. Been gone. And I think like,
is that legal? We don't know.
But tear up the contract. Yeah. That is legally binding, Fred. Nah, it's not now.
It's in the shredder now.
It's in the Thames. It's gone. Yeah. But that's the thing. I just think that is part of the sport. And as much as like, I think you're allowed to like like some characters more than others, but I do fundamentally respect, especially like Toto and Christian. You can't deny the success they've had as team principals. And
yeah, 1,000.
Long may it last into 2023, as far as I'm concerned. Because I'd be honest, I like the drama. I like the drama. I'm looking forward to Drive to Survive.
Drama, Mick. I love it.
What day is Drive to Survive at again?
Oh, is it 20? I've got it on my calendar, actually. I think it's like 23rd or something.
Yeah, I think it's
maybe 26th.
Week.
Yeah, so it's like late February.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That'll be spicy. I'm looking forward to that. But,
oh, God, that's going to be insane.
Mate, January is pretty dry, as we've already established, but there was a mad storyline. Right. Yep. Nick DeVries.
Yep. What has happened here? Lay it down. Lay it down for the audience.
So basically, Nick took out a loan in 2018,
yep,
which was the year he finished fourth in F2 behind George, Lando and Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't that far behind Alex either, like did a good job. He took out a loan, 250,000 euros to put towards his career. It's still like, I think to fund an F2 seat, I've heard the figure 2 million.
Right, so for about 2019.
I'm guessing. Yeah. Like, if you want to fund a seat in F2.
Yeah, I've heard this.
You have to stump up 2 million,
yeah,
usually from sponsors or whatever.
Yeah.
And then basically, it seems that if Nick got into F1 before the end of 2022, there was this deal that this guy he got the loan from would be owed half or a part of his wage anyway.
Right, okay.
Now, Nick's got his full-time seat for 2023.
Yeah.
But he did race in 2022 because Albon's appendix went pop.
Yeah.
And
blew up.
Yeah, and so Nick took his seat, and now he's basically taking him to court because he's like, I deserve half of your wage.
Hang on a second, wait. So Nick, so the deal was that Nick deserves half of this man's wage.
The man gets
half of his wage.
Half his F1 wage, yeah.
Okay,
he gets a seat before the end of 2022, but Nick's like, it's not a full, it was a one-off.
But I did race in...
He did technically race in 2022.
Okay, Nick, if you're watching, yeah, just from the outset, what are you doing? That was a terrible deal. Like, why would you do that? Like, why would you go, right, if I don't make it into F1 in the next 3 years, boom, I'll give you half my wage.
That's what, yeah.
I know, yeah, finally you did the 250,000
I don't know if it was
season.
Hard. Like, it might have been, obviously, we've only seen details that have kind of been put out public.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's one of them that it's just, you know, do you think it strikes as a deal that, you know, do you think Nick believed he would get to F1? Because if, you know, with the deal sounding like it was, he could have just, you know, well, he went into Formula E, had some success there. You know, he could have gone into like sports cars and whatever. And like, as long as he didn't get into F1 by the end of 2022, he's got that 250,000.
I guess
it's just like, it basically just is free money.
I was going to say, I guess like his route to F1 has been very weird.
It has been very odd. This is like another weird part of his weird route.
He won it the next season, 2019. He won F2.
Yeah.
So any usual F2 winner, I guess, would, you know, most of the time would get promoted into F1 just there and then.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He went off and did, you know, other stuff. Went off and did Formula E. Then came back again after that. So I get he probably wasn't. He wasn't expecting it to be like a 4-year gap between. But that just still seems like a terrible deal to me. Like, I don't understand why. I know you need a quarter of a mil, mate, but half the wage.
Yeah,
that seems like a lot.
I do wonder if AlphaTauri Red Bull was kind of supporting him in that as well, because obviously Nick has gone from a Mercedes back driver to now he's moved over, he's crossed the border into Red Bull territory.
Yeah, how does that work for them? Do they just get a random invoice from like this man in the Netherlands, just like, yeah, give me half the wage, mate?
But I think like part of the issue is that, and Nick's talked about this, and I think he does have support now, but up until, I know he's talked about this, up until like last year, he's been his own manager. Like, he's done everything himself.
Wow. Okay.
Like, he handles his own emails. Like he handles,
so if I email Nick DeVries right now, he'll see it.
I'd be baby. Unless he goes to spam.
Oh, shit. Hey, Nick, listen.
You know, go straight in. Like, that's basically DMs.
Yeah.
His email. Because most drivers, you know, they'll have management. They'll have, you know, I mean, more famously, obviously, you know, Anthony was Lewis's dad. Anthony was his manager for a lot of his career. And, you know, a lot of people will outsource that to family, and some will bring in kind of external. I think Max has got someone who's like known him since he was a kid.
Yoss being his man, like social media manager would be.
No, that's the thing. I think a lot of people expect it to be Yoss, but Yoss isn't actually Max's like manager, agent, whatever. But yeah, the fact that Nick's done, I do wonder as well, like, did Nick get someone to read over this agreement back in like, because he, by the sounds of it, he was still his own manager then. And you do wonder, it's one of them that, I guess, yeah, it comes back to bite you, but hopefully, Nick, you deserve your full wage, mate. So
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he's done enough to deserve the full wage, but I hope...
He's had a tough enough route in.
He doesn't need this. He doesn't need this. But also, how long is it for? Is it half his wage whilst he's in an F1 forever or a first year or...
This is what I mean. It's like, how much of it is actually written in a contract? Yeah. How legally binding is
I
that
really
contract?
Hope he just slapped it on like an A4 sheet of paper in like biro pen and then just handed it to him. It's like an IOU situation rather than a legally binding contract because...
Yeah, I would be somewhat concerned. But I mean, look, I just like, what's the worst case? The worst case scenario here, like, I don't think there's a situation because even if there is someone who's entitled to half of his wage, like F1 drivers... you know, I feel like the minimum you're going to be getting into like, you know, six figures, like a couple hundred thousand. I don't know what they pay in wages exactly. Yeah. It depends massively on the driver.
Yeah, of course.
Like a top driver can get paid. I mean, there's been various numbers floated with like Lewis and Max and what they get paid, like 40 million a year plus, like... Can't validate that, but like that, they're the numbers that
allegedly.
Been rumored, allegedly. But like, but like, I think the lower end is like maybe a couple hundred grand.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I wonder what, like, I reckon Nick's probably what AlphaTauri kind of team. Probably, I don't know. Let's just guess $500,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that's obviously a lot of money for someone to take for a 250 grand loan as well.
I suppose. Well, if it is $500,000, then he's getting a 250k back in the first year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You think, but if this guy wants to, you know. I mean, if there's the potential for Nick to earn $10 million a year, then no wonder this bloke's trying to like, there's good business opportunity.
Yeah, there's very good business opportunity.
Good return of investment.
Yeah. I think flip 250K into like $5 million would be crazy.
Yeah. No, I guess it's one of those instances, where before you get into F1, 250 grand is a lot of money. Once you actually get there, I guess that's the thing with motorsport. That's kind of part of the problem. It's so top heavy.
Yeah,
all the money's at the top.
Yeah.
Even if you get to F2, you've got loads of pay drivers because there's not enough. I guess F2 doesn't generate enough revenue from a sponsorship point of view.
Yeah.
It still needs, this team still need these pay drivers.
Yeah, 1,000. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did my dissertation on the cost of like motorsport. And
is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like I like tried to basically work out how much you needed to go karting.
Oh, come on. Give us some numbers, man.
That's I can't lie. I've forgotten some of the numbers, but it was about $2.5 million for F2.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for like a full season. And obviously, like when I was like doing stuff, when I was like writing essays and shit, all my tutors were like, wait, you actually have to pay to do the sport? Obviously, most of the, like, if, I don't know, your other like usual sports in the UK or like the most popular, obviously, you get like a salary and then that's it. You don't really bring anything to the table other than your ability. But obviously, yeah, motorsport is so different in the sense that you actually have to pay to drive as well.
Yeah.
You know, even in Formula 3, I think Formula 3 is like 1.2 mil. Just this, like an F3, but that was European F3 before they did the new one. This it is might what, even be more now.
You have to be somewhat of a pay driver to even get into the FIA system.
Yeah, 1,000.
Like if you need two and a half mil a year, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're like signed by a driver academy.
Yeah.
So like Piastri was Alpine.
Yeah.
You had Norris was part of McLaren, I think, when he was racing
in. Yeah, he was there. Yeah, I think so.
Obviously, George Russell was part of Mercedes when he was in F2.
Yeah.
But then if you're not part of one of those academies, I guess that's why it's quite a big deal for like, you know, Enzo Fittipaldi, Zay Maloney signing with Red Bull.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because then they don't have to stump up all the money themselves.
Yeah.
But you have to be like... You have to be, it doesn't matter how
even
good you
get
are.
There, you've still got to be good.
Yeah, you have to bring $2.5 million a year. Man. Even like top tier carts is about $250,000.
Yeah, yeah, 1,000.
A year.
Yeah.
Go karting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's barbaric.
It's wild.
Motorsport, yeah, sort it out.
Sort it out, just generally. All
wherever
of motorsport,
you are. Just all, it's terrible.
All of you, yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, even I think I chatted to some guy who like ran one of the karting tracks in the UK that do like host like some of the world and European karting races, and he was just like, yeah, no, like if you don't have like 200k
like realistically, you're probably not going to be able to compete like across the world in karting. And these kids are like 14 at this point. Pocket money's not going to do the job. Do you know what I mean? They're making it off that.
Behind the sofa, man.
Yeah, that adds up. Change. It does. It
adds up over
it
time.
It does, yeah.
That's for one season as well.
And two peas. Just take it Sainsbury's.
But you think about that as well. It's like, you stump up all this money and then there's all this time that like, because obviously you need like, especially at that age, you need parents who are going to support you.
Yeah.
So all the time there with you, taking you to events, they're not like able to work. Like it's...
Yeah. Yeah.
This sport, man. This is what I find mad. It's like... I feel like F1's fan base, I think F1, from what I've seen, having gone to races and seeing, you know, the conversation online, I think there's such a diverse group of people who follow F1.
Yeah, 1,000.
Like you go to Silverstone and you see every type of person.
Yeah.
More so than I'd say when I go to like a football match. You see every type of person. Yet the actual, football, for example, like is what, like anyone
can play. Yeah.
Like actually from a competitor point of view, it's, completely, there's no diversity in terms of types of people because it's all, you have to come from money. And that I don't know, I just find that kind of ironic.
It's completely flipped, isn't it? Well, it's not even, well, I mean, you still get like a lot of diversity in football fans as well, but I know what you mean. Like any type of human, you will see them at Silverstone. But yeah, when it comes, you can't just like, with football, obviously, you just grab some shin pads, got some football boots, you play as in the youth leagues, if you get scouted, if you're good enough, boom, doesn't matter where you came from. As long
kick ups in your garden every day.
Yeah. Just around some cones for a bit. Shooting practice, you're blessed, bro. But when it comes to Formula One, like you have to not only have
motorsport,
the ability, but
you've got like the lawnmower in the back garden.
Yeah.
Just doing donuts. That's about as good as you can get.
To be honest, if a kid could do donuts on a lawnmower, then get them in a Formula One car, because that is serious ability.
I wonder lawnmowers, you know, the sit on ones if they're rear wheel drive or not. I'd like to give that a go.
That would be great. I was distracted there.
Distracted by yourself in the zone. There's that picture and there's like a 4-year-old being on the lawnmower.
Scurrying around. But
well, something else I want to talk about as well, this is outside of, well, Lewis came from pretty humble beginnings and came through
indeed.
But something that's been a common theme, I think, throughout Lewis's F1 career is he signs his contracts really late. Like technically, as far as I'm aware, like he still hasn't signed officially for Mercedes like this season. He hasn't actually put pen to paper yet. And he always leaves it like right to the last minute.
Yeah.
Like, did Mercedes not
feel
like a bit...
He's for real. He's like me.
Explain what you mean by that, Aaron.
Because I'm late to everything. No. He's just biding his time. If he was that guy at uni that did like slap the deadline, slap the essay in at 1:59 for no reason. He finished it the day before.
Yeah.
We were just like, just leave it all. But yeah, it is interesting that
I do want like
he's not signed yet. Could you imagine? He just like sack it off. Well, Mercedes need a new driver.
I don't know is it Mercedes playing with fire? Because that. When Nico Rosberg left, they didn't see that coming. That took them like by surprise.
Guards,
and then they got Bottas from Williams, and obviously they had to pay Williams off. I think they paid Williams, I think it was about 10 mil, I remember reading. Good amount of money buy him out of his contract. But because I think Toto was saying, like, I remember reading something, him saying like, they just go into a room for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, chuck some numbers around and come out with but it's a risky strategy.
Yeah.
But then I feel like it's kind of, you get to a stage where like Mercedes, like Lewis knows that like if he leaves it so late, like Mercedes kind of has to give him what he wants.
Yeah.
Now I'm not saying that's why he leaves it so late.
Yeah.
But it is fact. Like it's a negotiation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's always going to, that will work, like realistically, if that's, I'm not saying that's his strategy, but yeah, obviously if they sat down a week before FP1 and he's like, yeah, well, give me this, they're obviously going to be like, oh yeah, well, we've got to give him what he wants.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much leeway, but yeah, no, it is, it's a strange strategy. It's very different to a lot of drivers. You know, a lot of drivers love to have that sort of security and just sort of sat down knowing, right, call that contract sorted. Valtteri Bottas is already talking about a contract that he kind of wants low-key at Alfa Romeo when his expires. Is it the end of this season coming up? Or
yeah, it's the end of this year. Yeah.
I think it might.
No, you're right. Yeah, end of 24.
Yeah.
I think Valtteri wants to tie himself down to
When the four rings come around in Audi.
Precisely. Precisely. Because that's a much more exciting prospect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Alfa Romeo.
How old will Valtteri Bottas be, though?
He will be, I think he'll be 35 by the end of his contract.
Yeah.
So you do want, like, because I think once drivers get to typically mid-30s,
yeah,
you know, Seb was 35 when he retired.
Mm.
You know, typically it's kind of between 35 and 40 yeah. when drivers start to, you know, hang up their gloves.
Yeah, and go, yeah, I'm done now.
Well, I guess everyone's like, I do wonder if Lewis would ever, because he's talked about before, I know, that he could have gone to Ferrari if he wanted to earlier in his career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's hard to picture Lewis anywhere other than, and obviously even when he was at McLaren, that was a McLaren Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so like, do you think Lewis would take, say Mercedes didn't want to, because Mercedes have got to think long term. When yeah, you've got yeah. a driver in their late 30s, you have to kind of, part of your thinking has to be to the future.
Yeah.
Do you think Lewis would do a Vettel, for example, and take a lower position on the grid?
I don't think he would. I just can't imagine it myself, personally.
It's hard to picture, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of partly because Lewis has always, since the very beginning, been like fighting for titles and stuff. Like, he didn't, like, even Seb came in, had that sort of Toro Rosso two seasons. I think, was it two seasons?
He had Sauber.
Yeah, then he had BMW Sauber for like a few
Toro Rosso, and obviously one at Monza, and then he got the Red Bull.
Then he got the Red Bull seat.
Yeah.
So even Seb had like a sort of, that junior come up, like a lower, you know, a team that's like where you are going to be struggling. You're not going to be battling for races, race wins and stuff. Whereas Lewis has had that in every single season where he's been battling for race wins and stuff. I'm not sure. I feel like he would want to end on his terms of like, right, cool. Got the 7, maybe even 8 titles by then.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Mm.
I don't need to drive for a team where I'm going to be struggling to get in the points. Because again, I always maintain with Lewis as well. I feel like he will. I'd be surprised if he was one of those drivers that goes as far as like a Kimi Raikkonen or Seb ends up at a lower ranked team, because he's like, he has so much outside of Formula One as well that he's interested in. Like, oh, he'll just drop an EP. Like, he doesn't need to drive for Alfa Romeo. Just go and make an album, bro. Like, do you know what I mean? He's got other things on his mind. World surfing championships, you know?
Listen.
He's dog.
He he got Roscoe. Like, he did kind of, yeah, he kind of, like the XNDA, he kind of dangled that.
Yeah.
And then it's just the one song.
Yeah.
But it's like, where's the rest? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if KSI can do it.
Needs to rename it to XN/A because it's not, the next songs aren't applicable because he hasn't made it.
That was awful. Also, I was just double checking actually. Lewis's contract actually, it would be, he does have a contract to the end of 2023.
All right, okay, cool.
But
he will leave it late, let's be honest.
The point still stands.
We'll sign it in December.
He will be leaving it very late because that's kind of just what Lewis does.
Yeah, that's how he operates.
We'll see.
And I respect that from him.
Yeah, I respect that as well. Right, we were talking a little bit beforehand, and we wanted to add a little section in here where we discuss the topic of underratedness.
Underrated.
Underratedness. five most underrated drivers, in our opinion, in our professional opinions, because we're very professional.
Yeah, I should be a professional individual.
Always. of all time. First of all, Niren, what does it mean to be underrated to you?
Well, for me, there's not like a specific level of drive that you have to be. There's still drivers who may have won championships, who may be regarded in some light by the rest of their peers or whatever. But the general public doesn't rate them as highly as they should.
Hmm.
They have a lot of ability. They may just not be talked about. They may fly under the radar. They might finish 8th in the championship.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone goes, ah, well, you know, they finished 8th, whatever. But in reality, their season was very consistent or whatever. For me, you can be underrated whether you're driving at the back or whether you're driving at the front. But it's someone who's, yeah, just doesn't get the ratings they deserve. from the general, the wider audience.
The general, yeah. Go under the radar for various reasons, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. You have to have strong wheel knowledge to know about them.
It's true.
To rate them.
Could be quality of teammate, could be quality of grid at the time, quality of car underneath them.
Precisely.
A lot of different. And I guess it's what you think most people think. But let us know. If you're watching on YouTube or if you're watching on audio only, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just scream into the...
We'll hear it. We will hear it.
Yeah, we'll probably hear it. Yeah. There's a good echo.
Yeah.
In this building, so we'll get that. Start with number five. Okay.
Can't lie. I've just remembered that I haven't ordered mine, but it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. Put him in.
ordering them in my head.
Put him. Okay. I'll go with mine first. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say a driver I think's underrated of all time. Rubens Barrichello.
Rubens Barrichello, always the bridesmaid, never the bride at Ferrari.
The thing is, when you spend so much of your career alongside a talent like Michael Schumacher, especially Michael Schumacher in his prime years, that you can't win everything. Like, you need... Rubens was part of that team. And yes, he was nowhere near Michael most of the time. But Michael set such a... I think Barrichello often gets written off as he was just like, you know, Michael Schumacher's kind of,
he kind of gets the Bottas.
He was Robin, Batman and Robin, you know what I mean? Very much Robin in the background, doesn't get the credit. But actually, Barrichello...
Robin still did stuff, man. Robin was out here as well.
He was.
Fighting some crimes sometimes.
Yeah, in his leotard.
Did he get in the car with Batman as well? Or did he just like...
He just
like, did Batman have the car? Robin just
Batman wouldn't
like,
let him in the car,
so he had to get like the tube to the
crime. Like, hold onto the roof rack on the Batmobile.
I thought he just got the bus down. Wherever the crime is, he gets the bus.
You and get the Uber.
He arrives in like 20 minutes. Like, oh, it's done already. We've already fought a bad guy, Robin. Like,
no, but you know what I mean. I just think that when you're for so much of your career, when you're up against a driver, so good, and we're seeing that kind of a bit at the minute with Max and whoever's his teammate. Because Max is making Sergio look worse than, say, Sainz relative to Leclerc, Russell relative to Hamilton, whatever, because of that gap being as big as it is. But actually, Perez is still an incredible racing driver.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, I feel like Barrichello, so much of his career was spent, like, even in the Brawn, obviously. Yes, Jensen won that championship.
Yeah.
Barrichello did his fair share.
Yeah.
But also, Jensen was a fantastic driver as well. And he won the championship.
That was
also
like right at the end of Barrichello's career. Mm. Like, he must have been like mid to late 30s by that point.
Oh, easy. I want to say. Yeah.
Like, because he only did one more season after that, right? He just went Williams and then he retired, I'm pretty sure. So,
sometimes
even be, I hear that. I hear that. I'm happy with that. I think it's unfair for him to get like the Bottas treatment in the sense of like, you know,
that's why I just think when you're up against such a generational driver, it's hard to establish yourself. You know,
did Rubens ever win a Brazilian Grand Prix? Because I feel like he always like blew up at it at some point. He'd be like winning, and then
I'm not sure
the car would blow up. I always felt really bad for him.
Yeah,
but
that's my P5 anyway.
All right, my next one comes from actually a similar era, and you may disagree. I was quite young at this point, so take this with a pinch of salt, right?
Yes, I'm 30, Niren. Thanks for reminding me.
I'm... I didn't even mean to.
I could take it up.
I'm going with David Coulthard. Who doesn't really ever get like put in... Because there's like a top tier world class echelon of Formula One drivers, isn't there, really? You've got like... Obviously, you've got the GOAT category, which is like, I don't know, Michael Schumacher's, Senna's, Hamilton's... Vettel's probably and Don's from ages ago. And then you've got like a lower boundary, which is like maybe a two-time world champion and whatever, or like one-time world champions, or just drivers that were very good. I don't even feel like David Coulthard even gets into that category amongst people that talk about him. And I don't really understand why. He came like second in 2001 behind only Michael Schumacher.
Yep.
He beat Rubens Barrichello in the championship that season. And that Ferrari that year was fucking nuts as well.
He pushed Hakkinen when he first came in as well.
I'm pretty sure he beat Hakkinen in the final season. When he first came in, he was pushing him. And Hakkinen's always, again, regarded in that sort of category. Yes, because he won two championships, I hear that.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty consistent driver. You kind of always knew what you were going to get, good race craft.
So even like, he was quite a pivotal early stage part of Red Bull as well.
Exactly, yeah.
He kind of helped set that team in that direction where they went from Jaguar to being, you know, by 2010.
Yeah.
You know.
Because it was literally the season after he retired, I'm pretty sure they became like, right, we're winning races and shit. So
it was,
he helped develop.
Yeah, wasn't it he retired for Seb in 2009?
Or yeah, 2008. He retired at the end of 08 and then I went there, I want to say in 09.
And I think he did, it was his last race, Sao Paulo, and he had some special livery and he got taken out first corner.
Yeah.
I think that was cool.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he got slapped at turn one.
Oof, not a good way. That's a good shout, actually, I like that one.
But yeah, no, okay. That's mine.
Watch out. Right, next one for me. Robert Kubica.
Ooh.
Robert Kubica. I've got to say that because I love... I like the Polish fans. When I went Silverstone 2019, honestly, they were incredible.
You know what? For ease of... He's on my list as well. So I'm just going to slap him
sick.
People.
Nice.
I'm going to slap him fourth as well.
Yeah.
Just to make it easier.
Great.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
Look at us.
So I think that, you know, Kubica was held in such high regard.
Yeah.
Like, you, there's quotes from Lewis, there's quotes, because he came up in that generation of like Hamilton, Rosberg, all that. Like, Kubica was like up there with them.
1,000, yeah.
And if things had, obviously without the accident, things would have been very different. Also, without BMW pulling resource.
Oh, that annoys me so much. Was it 08?
I think, yeah.
And he was like leading the championship and they just like stopped developing the car.
And it's just
he was like, what do you mean? I'm winning the championship.
And especially obviously since he came back and obviously he was, you know, not able to get to the levels he once was, which is completely, I mean, the fact he could drive an F1 car at all is a miracle considering his injuries.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, he got beaten by George. Yes, he kind of now is seen as just this reserve driver who comes with all and, you know, Alfa Romeo, and he gets that support.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, what could have been?
And the problem is, like you said as well, like people kind of then that, it's not his fault. Like the fact that, again, like the fact that he came back to Formula One after the injuries is incredible. Like genuinely miraculous. But obviously then when he was like, you know, fighting for like P18 and P19, newer generation fans were kind of like, oh, who's this guy? This old Don, whatever. People who were around back when he was actually in his prime and he was leading that championship in 08. No, okay. Oh no, this is not obviously the same Robert Kubica because of the accident. So I feel like he's underrated from that perspective as well. Newer F1 fans just don't have that same respect maybe for him because of how quick it, you know, despite how quick he was.
When you acknowledge originally his prime, I think it was 2010 and he set a pole lap around, I think it was Singapore.
Like a Renault.
In a Renault or Monaco or something, or maybe both. It was just, he was such a good driver. And I think given the right circumstances, I think he was going to go to Ferrari.
I was about to say, I think he was going to go to Ferrari.
Before the accident.
Yeah.
And you just think, wow, like Kubica or Alonso at Ferrari would have been
nuts.
Oh my days, that would have been unreal. Because them two prime.
Yeah.
You just think that Kubica, what could have been?
Man. Yeah, I know. It's one of the sad what could have been ones, isn't it, really?
It is, but we don't forget, Robert. Yeah. We don't forget.
Robert Kubica. When I went Budapest, the Polish fans were loving it. Oh. I went, I think it was in 2019.
Love that.
And all the Poles were there. Yeah, they were just chanting his name all race, literally. Like he's running 18th and you can't hear anything else but just Robert Kubica chants from the crowd. It was so sick.
He deserved his own full-scale orange army.
He did. For sure. Yeah.
All right, who's... Are you putting third on your list then?
All right. Well, you know what? I'm keeping it kind of We're gonna go a little bit more like recent times for my next one, P3, and this might be a surprising one. It's often maybe a small sample size, but Daniel Kvyat.
Explain.
Because I know he was a tiny bit accident prone when he first went to Red Bull, but like torpedo and all that jazz. But
I think that was harsh as well.
I think that was harsh. Fair. That demotion, if we're going to be totally honest, was not because of Daniel Kvyat not being good enough, because he beat Ricciardo 2015.
Yeah, he did.
So he beat Daniel Ricciardo 2015, who just come off the back of beating a four-time world champion, Seb Vettel, in a Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive. Like, we regard Daniel Ricciardo as one of the best drivers of this generation, got beaten by Daniel Kvyat in his first season in a Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is he was demoted to Toro Rosso because they were like, let's just get Max in. Yeah. It wasn't because of how bad Daniel Kvyat was. They needed an excuse. That crash that weekend in Sochi was an excuse to go, right, let's just pull the plug, get him out, get Max in there because we know he's the future.
Yeah.
And Max is generational. But that doesn't mean that Daniel Kvyat wasn't...
Circumstances went against him in that.
Yeah, 1,000. Obviously... He was solid as well then for Toro Rosso after that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to really, really stand out in a Toro Rosso, I think, when you've dropped down. Pierre Gasly did a good job, but Kvyat, I'm pretty sure, got a couple of podiums in Toro Rosso's.
Yeah, I remember
in Germany.
When it was like the weather was mad.
Mental,
Like, he managed to get through onto the podium because I remember his celebration. He just looked so happy. Oh, that was
It was like a completion of like a character arc moment. It was really
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, I think Kvyat's an interesting one because he's someone who's been around quite a lot. I think he was Ferrari affiliated at one stage as well. He's one of those drivers. I kind of looked at him similarly to Nico Hülkenberg, actually.
Yeah,
like obviously he did manage to get podiums, which Nico hasn't yet, and we'll see this year. But like, in terms of someone who's never really Alex, obviously I know all about Alex's first season in 2019. Kvyat did beat him, not by much, which I thought was a bit like, I think he maybe had an opportunity there to, I know a lot of people at the time, he could have got that Red Bull seat with Gasly not performing, but I don't think he was beating Albon by enough. He did outscore Albon by 10-8 in terms of like, proportionally. I think if he'd been battering Albon,
then he would have probably,
and I think with a driver of his experience, that is the one kind of thing I would maybe say. But I think
I just feel like he's gonna be one of those drivers that like in 5 years, like when someone says, oh, do you remember Daniel Kvyat, everyone goes, oh shit, man.
I
don't feel like that's deserved.
No, I know what you mean. Again, I think it's circumstances. A lot of these drivers would be like, if circumstances manifest a little bit differently.
Yeah, 1,000.
Okay. Well, I'm going a bit further back in time.
Mm.
My P3, and some of you watching might not even, well, I don't remember, but you don't even think of this person as a driver. Martin Brundle. Mr. Gridwalk.
Mr. Gridwalk.
Now, I'm saying this because, he's cultivated an amazing career in, in the broadcasting side of things. And he's great. I think Brundle's brilliant. But he was an unreal F1 driver.
Yeah.
He was teammates with Ayrton.
Yeah.
Like, he was at McLaren. I've watched a few things talking about Martin's career, and it's like, there was a lot of could have been moments for Martin. But it's one of them that, I think because his broadcasting career has been so successful, his actual racing career kind of gets forgotten about.
Yeah,
a bit
I hear that.
And pushed by the wayside. And actually, I do think like he was and I think a lot of the other drivers really respect Martin because they know like when they were growing up, like they knew Martin, like they knew him as the driver they watched on TV.
Yeah.
And, he had some, some really close calls in his career accident-wise, but managed to still have like a pretty full F1 career.
Yeah, exactly.
Went into broadcast and took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah.
And here he is. But I just think because he's had such a successful career off track, we underrate what he actually did on track.
Yeah, 1,000. So, yeah, no, I hear that.
Look at his caliber of teammates. Look at the performances that he put in, at McLaren and...
He was a bit unfairly dropped as well, wasn't he?
Mm.
From McLaren, I feel like. I'm pretty sure
I can't remember the exact kind of yeah, conditions around it.
96, wasn't it, or something like that?
Because I know, he raced at a few kind of back marker lower down the team. But again, yeah. I think in the 90s, that was like, you just had to scrap for a seat. You had to just find an opportunity wherever you could.
There was a lot kicking off, man. There was a finite amount of actual good seats. And
oh, mate, yeah, because you had the these 90s. Teams rocking up and not even making it because they can qualify.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a bit of a scrap. Mm. There was quite a lot of good drivers around in that era as well. Mm. That were filling up your Williamses. I mean, realistically, at that time, it was basically just Williams and McLaren, wasn't it, in terms of, like, actual...
Yeah.
Benetton had, like, two seasons, but then, like, for the most part, Ferrari were kind of a bit average at that point, so...
Yeah.
I think that's a good one. I rate that, because, you kind of just think about him... Even now, you know, I think of him more as, like, a TV personality, like a presenter, like a really good interviewer, this sort of stuff, rather than... You know, a racing driver.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's just because of time.
Yeah.
And people will feel this way about, you know, when they hear Mark Webber on comms or David Coulthard. But I still think of them as F1 drivers first, commentators second. Whereas I think Brundle, because he's been doing it so long, it's like you forget about his career.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I hear that. I rate that.
All right. The last two.
I'm going to go with...
Who are you putting second out of your two left?
Second. Oh, I don't know, you know.
Do you want to go on mine?
You go first.
So, very successful.
Uh-huh.
Ludicrously successful. Won the world title the year I was born. Yeah. It was a long time ago. Alain Prost.
Oh, really? I hear that actually, low-key, but carry on.
Because underrated, who is remembered from that period? It's Senna.
Yeah.
Because Senna is the driver who drove with... character.
Mm-hmm.
He had character.
Yeah.
He had an amazing support and following, was an incredible driver. And also the fact that he lost his life on track, I think just adds that, you know, it's like when any sports person, they're considered differently, I think, when they're taken before their time.
Yeah, 1,000, yeah.
And I think with Alain Prost, you know, he was every bit, you know, as kind of, he went toe-to-toe with Senna, mm-hmm. but he didn't have that following. And I just think that for me, Alain Prost is in my top three of all time.
Yeah.
And I you know, in my opinion, he was the more complete driver. I think Ayrton was the quicker driver, but I think Alain, everything into account, I would, you know, if I was a team principal of the time, I would have taken Alain, even though, you know, he had his fair share of, you know, controversies Ferrari and, you know, but the fact that, you know, you look in 93, he was able to come back after a year off, win that title.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he was so successful. And you look at also, if points had been, I think I remember reading, it's like if points were awarded
like they are
in the nights like that, he'd have like seven titles.
Really?
Yeah. So something along those lines, six or seven. Like he came very, very close and still won plenty of titles. He was able to, you know, not just, you know, go toe-to-toe with Senna, but beat Senna on his day.
Yeah.
And it was like, and the fact they were teammates, it adds to it. But, you know, Senna gets all of the, you know, the plaudits and the attention because he was, you know, Ayrton Senna.
Yeah, 1,000.
You know, and he's this character. And it's like, I think Alain, you know, we're talking about underrated. I think Alain kind of gets forgotten about a bit.
That's a really good one. I fully didn't think of him at all.
I mean, Alain Prost got kind of basically kicked out of Alpine.
Yeah.
From my understanding, because Laurent Rossi came in and didn't really want him about.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it wasn't even news.
Yeah.
Like
it's Alain Prost, like the amount of titles that he's won.
It's Alain Prost. Like, and it wasn't even really a big news story.
Yeah. No, and you're right. And like, obviously, a lot of people, like genuinely a lot of people from who especially grew up in the 90s, their Formula One, like greatest of all time, is probably Ayrton Senna.
Yeah.
But if we're being honest,
I get it.
Yeah, and I totally get it. Like, I obviously rate him highly as well. But it's a lot of it as well. It's not just about pace or amount of titles won or amount of races won. It is the character of Senna.
Absolutely.
His driving style and everything that came along with it as well.
Yeah, it was a lot more likeable, I think. And he garnered more kind of support and had these amazing Brazilian... But not just like around the world. He was the more loved driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hear that. That's good. That's good.
I've gone Prost.
See, that's wheel knowledge right there. That's wheel knowledge.
There you go.
That's a man who knows.
Real wheel. Real wheel, mate.
All of the wheel, all of the time. My number two is not quite as successful as Alain Prost, I'll be totally honest with you, but someone who did win a championship for about 20 seconds. Felipe, baby.
Yeah.
Another one changed by an incident, by an accident, really. Because I think before 09, I think a lot of people would maybe like maybe raise their eyebrow and go, yeah, but he was a bit sort of average for Ferrari. He was always Alonso sort of understudy after that accident in Hungary. But before, took it to Lewis Hamilton, took it to Kimi Raikkonen, definitely would have won a championship, in my opinion, if it wasn't
for that. Very good shout.
I always sort of felt bad for him. You know, Brazilian driver could have won the championship in Interlagos, had it for a second, and on the last corner, Lewis snatches it. Even though it's a crazy story, it's just kind of like,
oh, yeah.
I always feel, whenever I see that race back and I see the end bit where he's crying on the podium, I'm like, God, man,
the heartbreak,
the whole of Brazil was just must have just been like a mess for like the next week.
The heartbreak is what makes that such a sporting story, though,
yeah,
isn't
thousand
it?
Yeah,
it's like you don't get those like high profile massive sporting moments if you don't have the jubilation on one side and the absolute heartbreak
on the other. Thousand.
And even
thousand.
The fact that was in Brazil just added to all the context around it,
a million percent. Like really, like even as a young driver at Sauber was really impressive. Came in at Ferrari, won races as teammates to Michael Schumacher. Obviously, that Ferrari wasn't quite as quick as the Renault at that time, but showed a lot of promise up against Kimi, did well. Realistically, should have won that championship if it wasn't for Singapore as well. I think in 2008, was it when the fuel rig?
Yeah.
Like, without that, he wins the championship pretty easily, but it's a lot of if, buts, and maybes.
Yeah.
But that was his championship where it should have been.
Yeah.
And then after that, kind of, we don't really know the true potential.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, he still managed to have good longevity in his career, wasn't it?
You know, even going Williams like, at the end. Exactly. Yeah.
And still, like, you know, I think...
Retired, like, three different times. Came back every
time.
That's it. So. Resilience.
Couldn't get enough. I think he's still...
Resilience, because he's... Sorry.
I think he's still... Oh, maybe I'm getting him mixed up. I know him... Or is it all Barrichello? I think they're still racing, actually, in like Brazilian stock.
Yeah.
I think it might be Barrichello, actually. But yeah, Massa's a good shout. I was going between Massa and Barrichello. I think they're like you say, with Alonso as well. When you're teammates with someone who's such a generational talent, it's very hard to establish yourself and make your own legacy, I suppose.
Thousands. Yeah.
But okay, number one.
Number one.
On my list.
Uh-huh.
I've gone Juan Pablo Montoya.
Have you actually?
Mm-hmm. Oh, behave. Have you as well? Fuck off.
Yes. That overtake.
I promise we have not shared notes.
We've not collabed at all.
Have you? Yeah. JPM, top.
Yeah. I didn't order mine, but hang on.
That's weird.
That is
weird.
Yeah. He's at the bottom of mine, but he wasn't. That's gas.
Okay.
Move in Brazil on Michael Schumacher alone, I don't care.
Like,
that was such a sick.
The way he just came in and just did that. He just came in. But
yeah, doesn't care. He'd done IndyCar, didn't he, before? Right?
He'd come through, like, I think it was Kart at the time, whatever it's called. And then, he came in and he was like, so real and like aggressive, kind of what a modern kind of Max Verstappen is. Mm-hmm. Very, very kind of real, prepared to say what he wants. You know, when it was that Michael pushed him wide and press conference and he was like, so that side of it was like great. But also like he was, again, if he'd come through a different generation, I guess.
Yeah.
When Michael Schumacher wasn't there.
And Ferrari was
in that Ferrari.
Well.
Yeah. And they had such
a combination, wasn't it? Like, because the Williams and McLaren just were not good enough.
Yeah.
Realistically to challenge for the title on a regular basis, and that's kind of what let him down.
And it's like for him to not win a world championship, and he had his fair share of kind of pole positions and wins and all that, and it's just like, I don't know, man, I just feel like as a natural gift, I think JPM, if circumstances had been a bit different, and maybe if he'd have played the F1 political game a bit more, because obviously he ended up leaving mid-season
and going back
to the States because he couldn't be arsed with the bollocks around F1.
He went to McLaren and that didn't really work.
It didn't turn out. And then I think he went to like NASCAR after that because he was just like, I can't be arsed with the nonsense around Formula 1.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think in terms of a natural gift, I think if that had, you know, if things had gone a bit different, if he'd managed his career a bit differently, which I'm not holding that against him at all. I just think that, you know, he just had it. And he had everything as well.
He was
such an exciting driver. No.
If we're going to be totally honest, like, no one really...
No. And you're kind of defined your career, like the numbers don't remember, like, oh, every time you got close or every time you put the pressure on, and it's like, actually, he was just, oh, mate, I think when I first started, my first driver I remember was Mika Häkkinen, but when I like actually think about when I was a kid, the driver I liked the most, I loved JPM.
Yeah.
I loved him. I thought he was like, I'm real. Yeah. So that's, I'm probably biased. Like, that's probably.
No, no, I hear it.
But also, I do think he doesn't get the plug.
Because that balls to the wall racing in that era and like just taking it, just seeing Michael Schumacher as the guy who was clearly dominating, just going, yeah, no, you know what? I am absolutely pile driving this car up the inside. I don't give a fuck. From like two postcodes back, it's so cool.
Up yours.
But yeah. Big ups Juan Pablo. Jos Verstappen has blood on his hands for taking him out that time when he was a back marker.
Oh man, yeah. I forgot about that. Was that?
He just drove
it was JPM,
into
wasn't
him.
It?
He
was
down, he just drove into him. He was like, oh, sorry. I was like, pff.
Oof, didn't enjoy that one.
Yeah. At least all Max is a bad driver.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. All right, should we finish up with Equal Machinery?
Yeah. Let's get a bit of Equal Machinery going.
Now, if you don't know, this is the part of the end part of the show where we get a driver each. We're actually going to debate in their prime as well.
All right, sensational, yeah.
So we're not going to say if they were racing now. We're going to pick two drivers and we have to argue as to why they are better than the other in their prime.
Yeah.
I can't actually see on the notes. So I think producer Lewis, you're going to have to shout out who's got what. All right.
Yeah.
So for me, you said it over. Oh,
it's there. Oh, hello. I see. This is a good one.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So I've got prime Verstappen. I'm assuming you mean Max, not Jos. Because that'd be a lot more difficult.
Got on his hands.
And you've got prime Alonso. Amazon Prime Alonso.
Amazon Prime Fernando Alonso.
Right, let me get the timer up. Are you feeling confident?
I am. The problem that I have when it comes to Equal Machinery, right, is my memory is so bad. So things just pass me. You know when I was fighting for Hulkenberg and you're like, he didn't even mention Racing Point. I was like, I'm not going to lie, I forgot that didn't even exist. And that's the problem. So yeah, we'll go for it.
Do you want to go or should I go first? I'm happy to go first because I feel like I'll go first.
Okay.
Because Max is like, his whole career is more fresh in the mind. So
yeah, it's right now.
Yeah. You've got to delve into the background knowledge of 2001 when he first jumped into
Minardi. Yeah.
I don't even remember that bit. So, all right. 1 minute as to why Max Verstappen at his prime better than Fernando Alonso. Mm-hmm. You just have to look at the numbers, right? At 25 years of age, I think he's 25. He's got more wins. He's got equal championships to Vettel. Mm-hmm. He's got more podiums, I believe, as well. Max Verstappen, he came in so it's illegal for a driver to come in as early as Max Verstappen did, right? And his first race in a Red Bull, he won. He's made like drivers who are proven to be top quality now in Pierre Gasly, in Sergio Perez, in Alex Albon, look like thoroughly mediocre, right? By completely if you're putting up half a second or more on your teammate in qualifying, that's a really bad sign. He's doing this to established drivers. It's not just about him winning, him having a great car. It's that relative gap. And yes, Daniel Ricciardo pushed him closer because Daniel Ricciardo was incredible in that Red Bull, and Max still was able to assert himself enough in that team, which is all part of F1. It's not just about being a good racing driver. You have to be able to assert yourself in a team.
You're done.
And oh my God.
What did you even talk about in any of that? I'm not even going to lie. I don't know what you even said during that. That was a minute.
Oh shit. I fucked that up, didn't I? You know what's that? You remember when we had Matt on a few weeks ago? And he was struggling so much with Piastri. And I remember that minute felt like
forever.
Half an hour.
Yeah, it was a long time.
So I was just like, put doodling log. Oh my, okay.
You set it up really well. I just didn't get to the punchline.
I didn't dunk. You're like, you do all the hard work and you get to the backboard.
Yeah.
And he just yoop. Like, okay. I've not covered myself in the there. You've got a minute.
All right, keep an eye on the clock.
Argument I was making, I don't really
know. I just
looked
at the phone, it was like 57. I was like, hang on a second. You haven't said anything yet.
Right, go on, go.
All right, sensational. So, Fernando Alonso. First of all, didn't win as many races as Max Verstappen at the age that Max is, but that's purely because Max got into Formula 1 at a lot younger age. There's not much credibility to that. came in, won two championships, stopped the domination of Michael Schumacher all on his own. No other driver in the entire in the early thousands was able to do that. Came in a Renault, slapped up the field 2005 and in 2006. He drags the most out of any car, any given car that he's able to. Probably would have finished seventh in the championship this season with Alpine if the car didn't blow up at multiple different opportunities. During the Sebastian Vettel era, he was quite clearly not in a car that was anywhere near as good as the Red Bull and managed to take that Ferrari to heights that it shouldn't have been able to, at points where it was simply undrivable. Battered Felipe Massa, who I've just stated was one of the most underrated drivers ever, just but a segment ago, the entire way through that time, and probably deserved to have a championship extra during that time. Should have been three.
That's such a more well-rounded argument than mine. It's like I thought I had 5 minutes and
no, God, I hear it. Even that was quick. If I hadn't looked at the time, I definitely would have ran out.
No, you know,
I started talking about Alpine. I was like, oh shit, no, I've only got 10 seconds to go.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. So that is what it is. All right. I'll concede defeat on that.
No, point. No, you know what it is, right? Because we need to decide whether we believed it, right? We need to guess each other's arguments as to whether I think you believe it.
Yeah.
Because you
were carried away.
You were setting yourself up, bro. You could have carried on for like 10 minutes there.
Yeah.
So the fact that you didn't even get everything into a minute, I think you believe what you were talking about.
Prime Max Verstappen. Yes. I would pick Prime Max Verstappen over Prime Alonso. Yeah.
Why?
I just think that
I feel that's controversial.
Yeah, I just think that I think the one caveat to Alonso during a lot of his kind of career, and this has been talked about somewhat, is that, but then I suppose you could make this argument against Max, but I think Max has asserted himself in such a place that he can kind of, you know, he feels confident enough that he can own this Red Bull team.
Mm-hmm.
Not obviously legally, but in terms of like, he can really set the standard and he's asserted himself into a place where he can let his kind of ego come out a bit and the team kind of fall into line because he's just that good.
Yeah.
And I think you look at times where, I guess it's easier for Max because he's always, in his F1 career, he's always been that kind of lead figure, apart from alongside Ricciardo, where it did boil over, but he was able to assert enough that the team would just go all in on him.
Yeah, 1,000.
And Ricciardo felt that and decided that he didn't want to stay there anymore. I think with Alonso, where, you know, you put McLaren alongside Hamilton, you know, that was a year where I don't feel that, I cannot imagine, and yes, look, this was an era where Lewis had loads of testing before he first jumped into that McLaren. Mm-hmm. But I can't see, and Lewis, unreal, I can't see any rookie coming in and getting close to Max in their first season. If a rookie jumped in, an Oscar Piastri, a George Russell, Charles Leclerc, in their first season alongside this prime Max Verstappen, because I feel like Alonso was, you know, he just won two world titles.
Yeah.
I think that McLaren year is my biggest kind of caveat, I guess, because I think Lewis kind of, the whole situation, it kind of got to him and he allowed it to affect things where I think
if he'd have been stronger maybe mentally during that season and not let it get to him as much.
Yeah, in terms of talent, I think there's very little in it.
Mm.
Like, I'd still maybe say Max, but like, I don't know. I really don't. But like, I just think, yeah, prime. Well, Max is in his prime now. Maybe this is, you know, recency bias. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's Max feels unbeatable at the minute.
Yeah. It's a really tough one because like, even in my mind, this argument as well, like, I don't even know whether Max is in his prime. Like, he might actually still get better. Which is really concerning, I'm not going to lie. But if we're taking it as right now,
because we know this is
prime now, that was easily his most impressive season. The way that I look at it is, would the Alonso of like the Renault era and the Ferrari era have won the championship? But this is a very hard comparison because it's different eras. I know that, I realize that. But like, could I imagine Alonso dominating a championship like that?
Mm. But also I think as well, you've got a, I think the level of talent is stronger now
mm-hmm.
than arguably it ever has been.
Yeah.
Because these drivers are more prepared than ever.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of start earlier. There's so much technology. There's so much. It's like when you're comparing Messi to Maradona.
Yeah. Like football is just so different. You know,
if you put them both together.
Yeah.
Right, obviously, Messi's got a lot more fitness, like all that sports science. Mm-hmm. Stuff. And I think that's true for F1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot more, you know, you start early, there's a lot more technology, there's a lot more understanding of what is the perfect. So that's where I just think that, you know, just by being as part of a different generation puts you at a disadvantage if you were to actually compare.
Yeah, 1,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like Max is just, the fact that he started so early.
Yeah.
Like, illegally early.
Yeah,
now.
Literally.
It's not
literally
allowed now.
It was against the law.
Yeah, I just think that Max is, if he wants it, I think, and he's dug his heels in at Red Bull. He's like, I want to be here till 2028 minimum. I feel like he could break a lot of Lewis's records. He could.
He started earlier. Yeah, like, I think it's, oh God.
Go on, who are you saying? Come on.
I don't know, because you've said a lot of things there, and now I'm kind of like, I might have changed.
That's what I do. I say a lot of things without actually saying anything.
He does say a lot of things. He said a lot of things there, but
I built my career off of saying a lot without saying anything.
He's good. He's good at this. He's a professional.
Waffler. Come on.
I think, As I was saying it, I believed in Alonso. I believed that I would I wholeheartedly believe in 2 years I will change my mind, or like in a year, even maybe at the end of this season I'll go, you know what, yeah, no, fuck it. But I just think also the longevity of ability over a period of time. I know we're talking about primes, but there was a prime for Alonso. Right? If you,
it's hard to define his prime.
Guess, yeah, you can't even, like, what season do you even pick from, because there were so many.
Yeah.
You know, that first season at Renault, you got the second season at Renault. Yeah, sure, McLaren was a little bit of a disappointment, but then the entire Ferrari era, you could go with, realistically, apart from probably the final season.
But 2012, like, is often
2012
heralded,
is, even though he didn't win the championship, like, you've still got, like, so there's so many different points. Whereas with Max, we've got this season, which was a runaway victory. He absolutely slapped Perez. I always do have that sort of thing in my mind. The Red Bull is kind of catered for him a little bit in terms of his driving style to an extent. That's, again, a lot of the reason why he, well, not a lot of the reason, that's inflammatory, but it's part of the reason why I ended up slapping Gasly and Albon is he just couldn't drive the car.
Yeah,
it wasn't even a thing of, like, and yes, he has the ability and skill level
to extract performance
out of a very difficult car to drive. But that's also, it caters to his driving style, ultimately. You know, if you put him and Gasly maybe in a Mercedes, maybe you wouldn't have had that much of a big gap. It would have still been domination, but it wouldn't have been like a second a lap like it was then, because Gasly just couldn't drive the car.
With the Red Bull, you need more. You're asking more from the driver to extract to the ceiling.
1,000, yeah.
And I think that's where it was. The Mercedes, you're asking, because it was, well, historically anyway, it was a more like, season, like low rake, long wheelbase, all that.
Understeery.
Yeah. Come on, you haven't given, like, come on. You can't keep delaying, bruv.
I can, and I will. I'm gonna say I did, because in that moment I believed. I was like, yeah, no, I hear Fernando Alonso, but that might change by the end of the season. I'm not gonna lie.
So Alonso,
yeah, I'm gonna go with Alonso for now.
Well done. We got there in the end. Fucking hell.
I'm a fence sitter, professional fence sitter.
No, but you know what? Actually, I think the moral of this story, I can't think of more exciting made up driver pairings.
Yeah.
The Verstappen Alonso.
Wow. Fireworks.
Imagine Verstappen Alonso.
Gunter Steiner as team principal. Carnage, lad. Carnage.
All right, mate, let's wrap it there.
Yeah. What do you think as well? Down in the comment section, let us know. Who would you take in Equal Machinery? Max Verstappen or Fernando Alonso in their primes?
Good luck.
In their primes.
And don't, like, pretend, KFI. Don't pretend like, oh, it's clearly one or the other. It's Miles Alonso. Yeah. No, they're both incredible. They're both ridiculously good. It would be so close.
Unless it was Jos Verstappen. If it was Jos, then...
Okay, that's a different conversation entirely.
But yeah, fair enough. Yeah, well, we've waffled.
We have successfully waffled.
We've lived, we've loved, we've laughed.
We have.
we've conquered. I don't know what at this point. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in to the Last Lap podcast. We've got car reveals coming soon.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
very excited for it.
Soon,
we've
no
got
more
content.
Actual waffle. We can actually soon. Talk about something that's actually
yeah, great. No, exactly.
But shout out Nick DeVries for having a dodgy contract because
yeah, that gave us a lot of content today. So
yeah,
Nick and whoever that guy was, that financial advisor, don't go to him again.
No,
don't get advice from him ever.
That bridge has been burnt now.
Yeah, no.
Anyone looking for investment, if you see that name, you're like,
yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, he's asking for 250K.
The Dutch version of Dragon's Den.
Yeah, 1,000. 1,000. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you did enjoy, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss any podcasts or any clips or the live shows when they return.
Yep.
Before the season start, because if you didn't know, we will be here doing live coverage
every race.
Of all of the races.
Every single one.
You get me. So it's going to be great. Make sure to tune in for that. If you're an audio only warrior, then give us a good rating on Fiverr. Yeah, you can. Fuck it, man. Give us 5-star rating on Spotify. Give us a rating on Fiverr.
Expanding up on SoundCloud.
Yeah, we are. We're always on different media platforms. So if you want to give us like a subscription on LinkedIn, then feel free as well.
Nice. Yeah, professional.
Podcast like next week on Snapchat. You heard it here first.
Hello.
BBM as well. Until next time. Peace and love, ladies and gentlemen.
Ciao, adios. We are done.
Ciao, adios. Da, 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 da.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.